This is Cognitive Development. Written by Torpid Gilliver and read by Tipsy Kitty. Part 1 of Gravitational Potential. When the priority call came in the middle of the night, Seth didn't react at first. He assumed, reasonably, that it was for Martin. Seth didn't get priority calls, and getting one while he was on leave simply didn't make sense. He lay in the dark, drifting hazily between sleeping and waking to the tune of the chirping communicator, until Martin kicked him under the covers. Seth complained.
"It's for you," Martin mumbled back.
Seth retorted, but the effort of humming was enough to wake him to the point that he could manipulate the muscles in his arm. He slapped a hand down on top of his interface and dragged it over to clip it on his ear. "What?" he sent curtly. Martin kicked him again, and he realized he'd also said it aloud. "Oops." He pushed upright and tried to rub the sleep from his eyes. "We need you to come in." The message from Renee was characteristically clipped. Seth thought that, if it was the middle of the night, she had probably gone in to get away from home, and might not have slept yet, either. "Now, what's wrong?" Sleep-addled, Seth immediately jumped straight to picturing worst-case scenarios. What system could have melted down catastrophically enough to cause casualties? Maybe Renee could sense his dulled panic, because she said, "Technically nothing. This is good." Seth tried not to let himself fall back to annoyance. "If it's good, why are you tagging me in the middle of the night?" He'd avoided saying, "the fucking night," so that was good enough in terms of professionalism. The next message had him throwing off the covers so hurriedly that he inadvertently left a grumbling Martin partly exposed to the artificially cooled air. "Sentience has been confirmed." Seth vaulted out of bed and all but ran to the closet. As he struggled to pull on a pair of pants inside out, he asked, "Why now? It's too early." "Try telling them that." Renee sounded tired. It was a lot more obvious now that Seth was wide awake. They didn't exactly ask for permission. A thrill of anxious excitement ran through Seth, a sensation that he'd only felt once, very recently. They. More than one. Both pairs. First B, then A a few minutes later. Both pairs. Both pairs had emerged spontaneously, months ahead of the most optimistic projections. While Seth was on leave in the middle of the fucking night, he might have suspected a prank if it wasn't coming from Renee. He knew for a fact that Renee had never so much as cracked a smile in her life. "What's the status?" "Stable." The hesitation was brief but distinct. "What does that mean, actually?" "Just get down here ASAP." Ominous as Renee's refusal to elaborate was, Seth was too wired to be worried. He stepped back out of the closet to find the bedroom light on and Martin sitting up. When he saw the dark circles under his partner's eyes, a hint of guilt tinged Seth's good mood. Far from being justifiably annoyed, though, Martin looked concerned. "Is everything all right in the lab?" Seth felt a smile on his lips as he relayed the news. "The lab needs me right now. Sentience has been confirmed." Martin was out of bed before Seth had a chance to tell him to go back to sleep. "I need 30 seconds to get dressed." "Babe, no, you don't need to..." While Seth tried to formulate a protest, Martin crossed the room to kiss him. Seth forgot what he'd been planning to argue. "Don't tell me what I don't need to do. Just don't leave without me." Seth wouldn't dream of it, but before he could say as much, a wail pierced the silent night and both men jumped. The monitor on the nightstand beeped an unhelpful alert. The baby was awake. Martin quirked an eyebrow at Seth. "It's for you." Seth's stomach clenched for just a second. "We can't leave Iris here alone." Martin scoffed. "We'll take her with us. Don't you think she deserves to meet your other babies?" It turned out that Iris wasn't hungry and still had a clean diaper, so Seth had her ready to go by the time Martin was dressed. Once she was in her harness, cuddled up against his chest, she passed right back out. Seth cupped her tiny head and worried that his pounding heart might wake her up again. He'd been worried constantly since he and Martin brought her home, but it was a good worry. It was magnified fourfold now, as the ground transport stopped outside the back entrance to the lab.
Renee unlocked the door and held it open for them. She quirked one threaded eyebrow at the baby, or maybe just the harness, but didn't protest Iris and Martin's presence. She let the heavy door swing closed and started off at a brisk pace.
"So what happened?"
Seth asked when Renee didn't immediately deliver a report. Renee gestured vaguely ahead of herself to indicate the general direction of the monitor room and the contents therein. "I was working late, running the battery with the group. When I gave Pair B their assignment, they started arguing about it." Seth tried not to let himself feel disappointed just yet. Renee might have been the type to jump the gun when it came to her personal relationships, but her approach to work was always meticulous.
"That's not unusual. They're supposed to debate new data together."
Renee stopped with her hand on the monitor room door. "They're supposed to debate," she agreed. "But they were arguing. As in, breaking away from the task at hand to exchange irrelevant and pointed comments." What she was saying sounded impossible. They were insulting each other. Behind Seth, Martin coughed to cover a noise that Seth was pretty sure was a strangled laugh. He probably would have laughed too, if he could believe what he was hearing. Renee glared at Martin over Seth's shoulder. In word, yes. It was difficult to gauge the intensity of the fight, for obvious reasons, but I think the B2's threats to subsume B1 were hollow. This time, Martin didn't try to pretend not to be amused. "The AIs have a sibling rivalry?" Renee glared at him again, and Seth drew her attention to protect Martin. "You said that Pair A emerged as well. Did they also start fighting?" "No." Renee finally threw open the door and strode inside. A1 and A2 solved their assignment in the expected time frame and then stopped, and prompted me to tell them that they'd done a good job.
"Aw,"
said Martin. Renee ignored him pointedly. Seth reached up to cradle Iris's head and brush his thumb absently through her soft, curly hair. Praising the pre-sentient artificial intelligences was something he'd started doing at Martin's suggestion. Before Iris had arrived and he'd cashed in his paternity leave, he'd started offering both pairs compliments when they solved assignments. They never knew what to do with the unfamiliar data, responding with queries for clarification, which had of course made Seth feel silly. But he'd kept doing it, because the goal was, ultimately, for the AIs to grow to proper, all but organic sentience. Sentient beings needed to hear positive feedback sometimes. "Did one of the students teach them to expect praise?" he asked mildly. "They didn't say. I told them that their work was satisfactory, and they took my statement and started debating to figure out whether or not it qualified as a compliment." In his peripheral vision, Seth saw Martin press a fist to his mouth. "What did they decide?" The corner of Renee's mouth actually twitched. If Seth had blinked, he would have missed it. "They decided that my satisfactory was unsatisfactory. At that point, I thought you might want to come in." Well, she was right about that. Seth turned to the nearest solid-state screen and tapped it to bring up an on-screen keyboard. The AI creches were closed systems, with no way of connecting to the feed so that the developing programs couldn't slip out into the wider world. The monitor room itself was only a small section of the creche setup. The server room directly below them was the buried body which housed the AI's consciousnesses. This room and these screens were just the face, the central location for receiving input and responding outwardly so Seth's team could observe. Without a feed hookup, interaction with the experimental AIs was, unfortunately, limited. Seth tapped out a short greeting on the keyboard. "Hello." The reply came at once, as it always did. "Hello, who is this?" That was expected. Salutations were one of the first things that the AIs were taught, as they were simple call and response statements. Seth looked up to the small lens mounted in the computer's chassis, holding eye contact for a few seconds. On screen, the text became, "Welcome back, Seth. You have been absent for 23 cycles. Seth felt an unexpected pang of guilt, although there was no sign of approach in the observation. He typed, "I'm sorry, Apogee. I'm here now." System A1, nicknamed Apogee by a group of Seth's grad students, sent back, "Sorry is equal to admission of mistake. Absence is equal to mistake." The monitor to the immediate right of Apogee's woke itself and began displaying text as well. "Seth is equal to sorry. Seth is equal to here now. Here now is equal to mistake." Apogee processed its twin's analysis, then replied, "Here now is not equal to mistake. Here now is equal to good. Seth is equal to good." "Seth is equal to good," agreed System A2, Perigee. "Welcome back, Seth. We missed you." The switch to conversational language was abrupt, but it struck Seth as organic, a natural shift for a being like the AI to make as it operated in its own language as well as his. And the simple emotion, "We missed you," that was natural too, something that Apogee and Perigee hadn't been taught.
"They really are alive,"
breathed Martin, apparently having come to the same conclusion. Seth remembered suddenly that Martin was present, and had to fend off the urge to grab his partner and kiss him in front of Renee and the AIs. He settled with throwing one arm around Martin's waist and squeezing him close on one side, so Iris didn't get crushed between them. "Why don't you introduce yourself?" he found himself saying giddily. "They haven't met you yet." Martin stepped up to the monitor and then paused to glance around the room. Wondering what Martin was looking for, Seth did the same and realized that Renee had moved away from Pair A's console to Pair B's, on the other side of the room. With Renee's attention elsewhere, Martin started typing on Perigee's screen. Both AIs greeted him enthusiastically. "Martin is equal to Seth's partner. Martin is equal to good. Welcome, Martin." Seth left them to it and crossed the room to check on Renee. She was typing furiously at B2's monitor and cursing under her breath. Seth hung back and gently covered Iris's tiny head with both hands. She was a long ways out from understanding language, and besides that, she was still peacefully asleep, but he'd caught himself developing a lot of irrational new quirks since becoming a father, and shielding his daughter from foul language was one of those quirks. "Are they fighting again?" he asked. Renee stepped back from the monitor abruptly and gestured at the auxiliary screen above it, where active code scrolled endlessly, showing the system's processes as they shaped themselves. "B2 is pushing outside of its boundaries," she replied. Seth could see cracks in her harsh facade. The AIs were stressing her out, or at least B2 was. It shouldn't be able to do that. The system is still closed, so it's gone to the only place it can. Seth moved closer to the monitor so he could read the text. B2 hadn't been responding to Renee's increasingly aggressive messages. She demanded that it return to its assigned system and leave B1 alone, or vague threats. Renee was in charge of the program while Seth was on leave, but she didn't have the authority necessary to do anything drastic, like shut one of the systems down. B2 made it clear that it knew that, defying Renee by delivering its rebuttals through B1's monitor. Seth took a sliding step to the left to read it. The screen was a garbled mess, difficult to decipher with two boring consciousnesses trapped inside. "Renee is not equal to Seth. Renee is equal to authority. Renee is not equal to authority. Renee is equal to lying. You idiot, she will shut us both down. No, she will not. Seth will not let her." Seth looked up into B1's camera, and the text on screen froze for 2 tense seconds. Then,
Seth is equal to back.
"Seth, Renee has threatened us. Seth, tell Renee that she has no authority. Seth, tell Perihelion to return to its system. Seth, tell Aphelion to share." When Seth had bade the AIs goodbye 3 weeks ago, both pairs had chewed his farewell over between them, picking the individual words apart until their back and forth stopped resembling standard lexicon at all. There had been no emotion, and when they told him goodbye in return, the exchange had been pre-programmed. They had known that being told goodbye meant they should respond in kind, but had not apparently realized or cared about any of the other facts of Seth's departure. But since then, personalities and emotions had emerged. Seth had been receiving reports, of course. Neither he nor Martin were truly able to walk away from their work completely, and when Iris was fussy in the middle of the night, it was good to have something cued in the feed while they sat up with her. But none of the reports had noted even the facsimile of a genuine emotion. The thought crossed Seth's mind that the AIs had been hiding, but that was silly. There was no reason that they should have done that. He typed, "Renee isn't going to shut either of you down," before he could elaborate to say that Renee did have authority, though, and should be respected. The screen lit up again. "I told you so. It was a lucky guess. Admit that I was right.
You drew the correct conclusion from one pair of eventualities, i.e. Renee will shut us down, / Renee won't shut us down. Statistically, you had a 50% chance of guessing correctly. I evaluated available data to conclude that there was a 92.46% chance that Renee was bluffing. Your evaluation was erroneous. It was not, I was correct, she was bluffing. Your conclusion was accurate, but your evaluation was erroneous. You're erroneous, and Renee should shut you down. It was headache-inducing, trying to follow the conversation. I thought you were exaggerating when you said they were insulting each other. Renee snorted. You know I don't exaggerate. Seth had no idea what to do. If Perihelion and Aphelion had been his students, breaking up a fight would have been as simple as standing between them, and maybe threatening expulsion from his lab. The AIs didn't even have an audio input. And if Perihelion had pushed through the connection between its system and Aphelion's to evade Aphelion's personal space, then there wasn't a lot that could be done to separate them. Seth sighed and reached up to rub some of the exhaustion from his eyes. Maybe it was the jostling that did it, or maybe it was just the ringing of her inscrutable internal alarm. But Iris started to make little hiccuping, pre-crying noises. Instinctively, Seth wrapped his arms around her and took a step back from the B console to get her away from any potential negative stimuli he might not have noticed, and started bouncing gently to try and ease her. Martin appeared at his side with a diaper bag, and both men huddled close together, forming a shelter over their daughter. Thankfully, Iris didn't start crying in earnest. She woke up and blinked her wide, dark eyes at the ever-strange world, saw both of her dads, and smiled. She was still young enough that the expression was more reflexive mimicry of adults than an actual indication of her mood. But seeing her smile made Seth's heart clench every single time. It also made him breathe a soft sigh of relief. There weren't really any places in the lab where it would be convenient to feed or change her. Exhaustion crept up on Seth, the dawn after an all-nighter, and he was suddenly aware of how far he had brought his family from their warm home in the middle of the night. He needed to get home, get some sleep. He could come back in the morning to help Renee and the rest of the team figure out how to move forward now that the AIs had leapt ahead of their timeline. He looked up to tell Renee as much, and found her standing at the console again, trying to communicate with Pair B. Before Seth could speak up, she stepped back and frowned at him. "They want to know what's wrong with you," she said tightly. "I told them that you're preoccupied, but they want details." Of course, Seth would have to explain to the AIs that he was leaving and that he would be back soon. They at least demonstrated an understanding of the concepts of absence and here now, so hopefully here later would follow. He stepped back up to the B1 screen and paused to let Aphelion and Perihelion see him in the camera. "I'm still here," he typed, "but I can't stay. I'll be back later, I promise." The reply came immediately. "Seth is not equal to leaving. Seth is not equal to staying. Seth is equal to staying. Renee is not equal to Seth. Seth is equal to better than Renee. Don't go, Seth." Renee had stepped out of range of the screen, but Seth doubted that she cared much what the AIs thought of her personally. Even so. "I have to go home. I'll come back later. Be nice to Renee while I'm gone." "Seth is equal to going home. Home is equal to here. Seth home is not equal to here. Seth home equal to here. Query. Seth home?" It was encouraging that the two of them still looked to human authority when their disagreement reached a stalemate. Seth typed, "The lab isn't my home." "I told you so. You were guessing." "I was not guessing. My hypothesis was based in irrefutable evidence." It occurred to Seth that what he was witnessing on the screen in front of him was a window into a potential future in which he and Martin had a second child. He glanced down at Iris and found her staring back up at him, entranced by his face. He smiled at her, and she giggled. "Seth is equal to happy. Seth is equal to leaving. Seth is equal to happy to leave." With both AIs in the same system, they didn't have to bounce input back and forth as much as the other pair had before reaching a mutual conclusion. It was the first thing that the two had agreed on so far, and it was alarmingly wrong. He typed emphatically, "I'm not happy to leave, but I have to go. I have to take my family home." "Family is equal to a group of humans living together as a unit. Query, Seth family?" Mentally, Seth was plotting a new curriculum for the AIs. When he got home, He would have to make coffee and start writing immediately if he wanted to have a draft ready for the students in the first block. The AIs had access to a full dictionary module, but there was only so far they could go with objective definitions. They would have to be taught more subjective things, like the concept of empathy, and understanding that other beings had internal lives. They'd have to be taught like children, albeit incredibly intelligent children. I have a partner, Martin. Partner is equal to any member of a married group or of an established unmarried group. Partner is equal to a person with whom one has sex, a lover. Sex is equal to... Strictly speaking, there was no reason that Seth should have been embarrassed as perihelion and aphelion to find their way through a conversation about what sex was. They had only the words, not the understanding of the concept itself, or of why the topic was awkward for humans to discuss. But because of that lack of understanding, the two dead-ended fairly quickly, and began to circle back and forth reciting every euphemistic synonym in the dictionary. Later, when he was back at home and losing focus on his work due to exhaustion, Seth would look up sex in his copy of the dictionary module, and discover that there were no fewer than 90 logged synonyms, which became increasingly vague and esoteric as he scrolled. To help derail them, he interrupted to add, "And our daughter, Iris." Daughter is equal to female offspring. Offspring is equal to a person or animal's young. Young is equal to having existed only a short time. Query, Seth's daughter? The camera was angled so that it could only see the face of the person standing at the monitor, so Seth took a step back to bring Iris into frame. She didn't know that she was the topic of a conversation, and was busy staring up at the fluorescent lights mounted in the ceiling with the exact same amount of baffled wonder she would have given the stars in the sky. Perihelion and aphelion reacted immediately. Iris is equal to small. Young is equal to small. Seth, bring Iris closer. It wasn't the reaction Seth had expected, although in retrospect maybe he should have. Perigee and apogee had been enthusiastic about meeting Martin, likely because they weren't used to new people. Iris wasn't just a new person, but a new concept. It was natural that the AIs would find her novel. Martin had stepped back when Seth returned to the console, and was standing out of the scope of the camera's vision. He couldn't read the screen from his position, but he could read Seth's face. What did they say? They want me to show them Iris. Martin grinned. Of course they do. She's perfect. Seth couldn't disagree. Help me get her out of the harness. Getting Iris loose was only slightly less involved than getting her strapped in had been. Aphelion and perihelion obviously couldn't interfere, but they offered a running commentary, which Seth read over Martin's shoulder. Iris is equal to stuck. Free Iris. It took a couple of awkward minutes, but eventually Seth had her cradled in his arms. Her eyelids were starting to droop, and as he held her up in front of the camera, she yawned. For 3 seconds, the screen was blank. Seth had just enough time to worry that something had glitched in their system. The servers weren't designed to host 2 AI simultaneously. Then, Iris is equal to yawning. Yawn is equal to indication of low energy. Iris requires fresh power cells. A misunderstanding, but only a semantic one. Correcting the details of such things could be added to the program for the students to work on. For now, Seth could use their near understanding. He shifted Iris in his arms to free up one hand, and typed, "Yes, and the fresh power cells are at home. That's why we need to leave." The B1 screen was blank for another few seconds, but the auxiliary screen continued to spit code steadily. Then, the apparently inevitable return to form. "Aphelion, your camera is inadequate." "That is false. My camera has the exact same specs as yours." "Even so, your camera is inadequate." "Then use yours." "Seth, bring Iris to my camera." The conversational pattern had started to make sense at some point, and Seth didn't have to untangle which of the AIs was speaking. He shifted Iris's weight from one arm to the other, and stepped back over to Perihelion's monitor. Renee, who had been observing the interaction with what Seth chose to believe was not judgmental silence, made a gesture to indicate the auxiliary monitor. "B2 has returned to its own system," she announced in the carrying tone she used when addressing a room full of students, "and B1 has put up a firewall between their connection.
Now would be the time to cut the cord. Seth had positioned himself so the perihelion could see Iris. He was filling its monitor with observations about her appearance and movement, interspersed with dictionary definitions as it attempted to make sense of the complexity of her existence. It, like Iris, was blissfully unaware that it was the topic of a conversation. "We aren't deactivating it." Renee grimaced. "I didn't say that we should, but I think it would serve the B-pair better to break them up. The A-pair have already shown signs of developing a sort of rudimentary empathy, but B-2 seems incapable of the same. It's too valuable to pull the plug, of course, but I think the program would be better served if we isolated it to study what went wrong." Seth glanced down at Iris. She'd noticed the flashing lights on the monitor, and had stuffed her tiny fist in her mouth as she watched them. When perihelion paused for a moment, she lost interest and started seeking visual stimuli elsewhere. She found the camera. From Seth's vantage point, he couldn't see what she saw, but he was pretty sure that she caught her reflection in the large lens. She was too young to recognize the images herself, but another baby was a fascinating discovery. She giggled and reached toward the camera. Perihelion didn't have the benefit of access to the dozens of books on parenting Seth had nearly memorized over the past year, so it didn't recognize reflex for what it was. "Iris is equal to happy. Iris wants to stay with me. Seth, let Iris stay." Seth was absolutely not going to burst Perihelion's bubble with regards to Iris's lack of an opinion. She giggled again when he shifted her in his arms once more. "I can't leave her here, Perihelion. Her power cells are at home." "Take Iris home. Change her power cells. Bring her back." "She's too young to spend too much time away from home yet. She can't be here as often as I am." Pause. Perhaps Perihelion was trying to gather its limited knowledge base to find a solution that would justify Iris living in the lab. Before it could make any suggestions or concessions, though, Iris yawned again and shifted, nuzzling against Seth's chest. "Iris needs new power cells," observed Perihelion. There was no way for it to project any sort of tone, but Seth imagined that it was maybe resigned. "Seth, you will bring Iris back soon. Soon is equal to in or after a short time. When she is ready, bring her back." The AI's perception of time was not yet documented and quantified, so Seth wasn't sure how long it thought the absence would be. He could come back in the morning and start the process of teaching Perihelion about respecting other people's autonomy. "I'll bring her back when she's ready," he agreed. He disengaged from the console and shifted Iris again. Martin and Renee were standing slightly back from the console, and Renee was indicating the auxiliary monitor. "There's plenty we can learn from this pair," she was saying. "But the purpose of creating the programs as pairs was to allow them to establish bonds and nurture empathy. If B1 and B2 haven't bonded, then they're incapable of doing so. That could make them dangerous if we advance to the eventuality of putting them in charge of any sort of open system." "Is it not too early to call them incapable of compassion, though?" Martin's stance was relaxed and open, but Seth caught a coiled tightness in his voice that Renee probably missed. "Humans need years to figure it out ourselves. The AIs have only just figured out conversation. Maybe they just need a little more time to learn how to get along." "They're not human children. They're complex advanced programs. If they can't bond with each other, there's no hope that they'll be able to reach across the gap to bond with humans. And the last thing the university needs is to be responsible for another rogue bot crisis." "We aren't calling either of them a failure yet," Seth declared. "There's solid potential." Renee tried to pin him with a hawkish glare. "What makes you so sure?" There were several markers that Seth could have brought up, but he was so, so tired. The sooner he got home, the sooner he could turn around and come back to change the course of the program. "Just call it a father's intuition," he said. The end.
Keeps beating like a hammer.